Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
It's almost time for the Classic Kentucky Derby. It's coming up right around the corner, the 152nd Kentucky Derby, and it's a loaded field, and I think there are a lot of storylines. Of course, we always talk about the Triple Crown, and we always bring in my great friend Steve Bordstein, who's typically talking baseball or football, but around this time of the year, Steve, I know it's all about horse racing, so I appreciate you taking out the time ahead of Saturday.
Happy to be here, as always.
20 horses in this field, so as we sit at this particular time, I'm sure you're probably very excited about this field. I know the first question that any horse racing analyst is going to get asked is, hey, can someone win the Triple Crown this year? That's typically the very first question. So I guess running the risk of starting with a cliche, let's start there. Is there a Triple Crown winner in this year's field?
I don't believe so, and I believe the reason for that is because there are horses that are peaking at the wrong time, and that's part of the beauty, I guess, of the whole Triple Crown chase, is there are horses that are sort of getting better, but not in time for the Derby. They got better too late. There's a horse running, coincidentally, earlier on the card on Derby Day, in the eighth race, I believe it's the Pat Day Mile. There's a horse in there by the name of Crude Velocity, who I believe will win the Pat Day Stakes earlier in the day. He'll probably run back in 2 weeks in the Preakness. He's the one you ought to follow. There's a horse that, there's a couple of horses that we'll see probably in the next couple of days, or maybe we saw a week ago or 2 weeks ago, that just didn't get enough qualifying points for the Preakness. And that's the challenge of it all, is not only are you running against the horses that you're going to run against in the Derby on Saturday, but then you get all these new shooters that come in at the last minute. You'll have horses that are coming in from overseas or coming in from New York that'll run to the Belmont. And the Belmont is interesting because it won't be run at Belmont this year. It'll be run at Aqueduct. So there's all sorts of different elements to this. Even the Preakness won't be run at Pimlico. The Preakness is going to be run at Laurel Park. So there's all sorts of different elements to it. So for that reason alone, I don't think there's a Triple Crown winner. That and the fact that it's the most difficult thing in horse racing to do, and it should be difficult. And I think that we've gotten our fill in the last 10 years with the American Pharaohs and the Justifies. Yeah. But I think we've satiated that need for a little while. And I think it's better to just concentrate on the Derby and go from there.
I agree. I agree with you 100%, but I do have to ask, with all the variables, right, and all the changes going down with the Triple Crown and the locations, if we did have a Triple Crown winner, would it hit the same?
It should. It's still being run the same time.
Yeah.
It's still 2 weeks after the Derby, they'd run the Preakness. It's still 3 weeks after the Preakness, they'd run the Belmont. So, yeah, for that element alone, it should still hit the same. And the fact that you're running on tracks that, again, especially with Laurel, I don't believe even has a qualifying Derby race. So, you know, add that element to it. I don't believe any of the horses that are running in Saturday's Derby have ever stepped foot on Pimlico or Laurel, for that matter. So that makes it even more intriguing. Most of these horses have never run a Churchill down. So, yeah, it should still hit the same. That if, in fact, you did have a horse step up to win the Triple Crown, it should hit exactly the same. It'll just be, and then there shouldn't be an asterisk next to it. There shouldn't be a big yellow mark through its name. Oh, it was run at different racetracks. It's still the three most difficult race sequence to win in the entirety of the sport.
Again, Steve Bordstein joining us right now as we talk about the Kentucky Derby coming up on Saturday. I do want to get your thoughts on the favorite right out of the gate. Talk to me about Renegade, of course, trained by Todd Pletcher. I think anytime you put Todd Pletcher's name in front of a horse, there's intrigue. There's another trainer I know we're going to get into in just a moment as well. But Renegade right now drawing out of the one post. And if I'm not mistaken, he's sitting at 4-1 right now. Odds on favorite. Rightfully so. Do you see this being one of those deals where, you know, coming out of the one post, the favorite just takes care of business?
Well, Well, especially considering his running style. Normally, you don't want to be a speedster on the rail because everyone's going to come crashing over on top of you. Renegade's going to tuck back. That's his running style. He wants to come from off the pace. So the rail isn't the biggest concern for me at all as far as how he'll run. He'll come from off the pace. The question will be, can he navigate his way around, you know, 8 or 9 other horses? Again, the biggest field he's ever run against was the 11-horse field that he ran against in the Remsen Stakes. That was last December at Aqueduct. He hasn't run against large fields. Most of these horses haven't. So that's always the element. The rail post isn't going to be what beats him if, in fact, he does lose. It'll be the fact that he's going to have a lot of traffic in his way, and he's going to have to navigate his way through that under jockey Irad Ortiz. And that's another intriguing element of this, is that he had the option of riding one of two horses in this race. He chose to ride Renegade as opposed to riding the other horse that he had ridden before, and that's Further Ado, and we'll talk about him in a moment. But Renegade, that's going to be, but Irad Ortiz decided to ride Renegade for trainer Todd Pletcher, and that's an intriguing part of the race, but the rail won't be what gets him beat.
Bob Baffert's name has kind of been soured, right, over the last few years. It seems like that was a topic of discussion every single time we would talk about the Triple Crown. It seems to have died down a little bit, but it is a fairly significant race for Bob Baffert. He has two chances to win the Derby, and if he does, it would break a tie with Ben Jones for the most of any trainer. So you look at the two shots here for Bob Baffert, but before we talk about those horses, just how refreshing is it from your perspective to be an analyst of the sport that doesn't necessarily have to talk about the controversy that kind of plagued the Triple Crown for the last several years?
I talked about this with a friend of mine from college who we kind of just rediscovered each other on Facebook recently, and her family's big into horse racing and wanted to get my opinion on the Bob Baffert thing. And I remember Bob Baffert fondly from his days when he trained quarter horses back in the late 80s and early 90s in Southern California, when the name Bob Baffert didn't mean anything, before he became the world-class, you know, trainer that he has become in the last 10, 15 years. Horse racing had to do a real about face as far as the promotion of Bob Baffert and about the success of Bob Baffert. Now, in light of all the drug positives that came up with his name attached to them and the horses that may or may not have been, you know, medically altered, for lack of a better term, on their way to the Kentucky Derby and even through the runs of the Triple Crown with both American Pharoah and Justify. I'm glad that horse racing has kind of cleansed itself a little bit. I'm glad that the two horses that do bear his name, number 4, the litmus test, is 50-1 on the morning line. What is it, number 14, Potent, is 20-1 on the morning line. Potent's probably got the best opportunity of those two to make a name for himself in the Kentucky Derby, but I'm hoping that when Saturday does roll around, we're not stuck with a 10-minute feature on the rise and fall of Bob Baffert. He doesn't deserve it. The horses that are in the race, the trainers that are in the race, the jockeys that are in the race, the people who own these horses, those are the stories of the race. If Bob Baffert wins, God bless him, but let's not make it out that we need Bob Baffert anymore. The sport doesn't need Bob Baffert. The sport never needed Bob Baffert, but the sport went out of its way. They bent over backwards to sort of invalidate everything that Bob Baffert's ever done, and I'm sad about that because I like Bob Baffert as a person. I think he might have gotten away with a few pieces of chicanery along the way, but there isn't a trainer out there who didn't get away with something along the way.
Again, Steve Bortstein joining us right now as we talk about the Kentucky Derby coming up this Saturday. Steve, there's some other great storylines here. I love the fact that it is it's full, right? I mean, it's packed. We're all the way capacity in the Kentucky Derby, and a horse sliding in at the very last moment, I think, does create a little bit of an interesting topic, and that has happened with the Derby, and it can happen right over the next 48 hours.
Sure. You have, unlike years past, you have a 20-horse field. But now, if a horse is scratched out, the race would be reduced to 19 horses or 18 horses. But now we've created an also eligible list, so that if one of the 20 who drew in the main field does come out, 21 gets into the race. Or if another horse comes out, 22 will get into the race. Well, that did happen just over the last 24 hours. A horse by the name of Silent Tactic, trained by Mark Cassie, scratched out of the race, came up with a foot bruise, which happens. So number 21, Great White, now moves in his place. Great White, if you're not familiar with him, you shouldn't feel bad about that. He's not a horse that you would be familiar with. He was a well-beaten fifth in his most recent start. He was well-beaten behind Further Ado, who we'll talk about in a moment. He comes in for a trainer that not a lot of people are familiar with, but we do have a 20-horse field. And again, I'll go back to, you know, the what makes the Derby so unique is most of these horses have never run a Churchill Downs. Most of these horses, if not all of these horses, have never run in front of a crowd that'll be assembled at Churchill Downs. They'll never run in front of 140,000 people that'll be assembled at Churchill Downs on Saturday. And most of them will never run this distance under this type of immense spotlight that they're going to face on Saturday. So that's it's part of the intriguing, illuminating, and unique element of the Kentucky Derby.
Renegade, the odds on favorite 4-1. You just mentioned a couple of names a moment ago, one of them being Further Ado, 6-1, Commandment at 6-1, and then Chief Wallaby at 8-1. So those would be the heavy hitters going into this to this event on Saturday. Talk to me about the guys following, or trying to follow, I guess, right now, Renegade, as far as the odds are concerned.
I'll start with Chief Wallaby, who's an interesting player. He was a third place finisher last time up behind Commandment in the Florida Derby. Before that, he was second in the Fountain of Youth. He has only a maiden win, so that would be something that he'd have to overcome, is that he hasn't won a race in a while. He'll be closer to the early pace for trainer Bill Mott. And the irony, there's a story there with Bill Mott, is that Bill Mott's been in the business for 30 years. He's a great trainer, probably best known for his work with Cigar back in the early 90s. His son, Riley Mott, is also a trainer, and he's got a couple of horses in the race. Riley Mott trains all of us who's going to break from the two posts, as well as number 11, Incredibles, who will break from the 11 posts. He's got a little father-son connection working there. I'm not too concerned about Chief Wallaby. Again, I think just his lack of racing is going to be what beats him. You've got another horse, Emerging Market, who was a narrow winner last time out in the Louisiana Derby. He's 2-for-2, but again, lightly raced. And, you know, there's a difference between, you know, running against a field of 9 and running against a field of 20 when you got to do that in front of 150,000 people. So I'll be curious to see how he sort of reacts. And you'll see it with horses that they get nervous, just like an athlete, you know, running in front of 40 people one day, and then the next day they're running in front of 10,000 people. It's a different world. The Churchill Downs paddock is much tighter. It's a much more compact area, especially when there's going to be that many people and that many cameras. Just like a person, a horse feels it too. They understand that they will understand that there's a certain air of difference in the room, if you will, as it relates to going into the paddock at the Kentucky Derby and walking onto the racetrack in front of that crowd. So those two lightly raced horses, excuse me, I'm not that concerned with. Commandment's an interesting one for trainer Brad Cox. He's won each of his last two starts. We mentioned the Fountain of Youth and the Florida Derby. He won both those races. Again, he's another one whose jockey could have gone another direction. He'll be ridden for the first time ever by Luis Saez, who's won the Derby before. Brad Cox is a top-notch trainer, and he has one thing that's going in his favor. He actually not only has run at Churchill Downs, he's won at Churchill Downs. He broke his maiden at Churchill Downs as a 2-year-old last November. Well, that was 7 months ago. Doesn't matter. Horses for Courses is one of my favorite angles in horse racing. So Commandment is one I would definitely look at. Again, I don't think he'll be too far off the early pace. And if he settles into a good spot, Commandment's going to be one to look at.
Who's the one long shot that you've kind of fallen in love with? Not one that you're going to predict would win this race, but maybe one that maybe it has a soft spot in Steve's heart, or you would say, hey, pay attention to this guy because he has the capability.
Well, let's just put one thing to rest right now. There is no soft space in Steve.
Oh, there is too.
Number 9, the Puma. is a real intrigue. Let's be honest here. You've known me long enough. Your listeners have heard me long enough. They know there's no soft spot in my heart. Number nine, the Puma, is a very interesting player in this race. He got the lead and got tagged right on the wire last time out in the Florida Derby behind Commandment. I like the Puma's running style. Horses that come from Tampa Bay Downs have run well historically in the Kentucky Derby. It started with Barbaro back in 2006, that the Puma, it comes from Tampa Bay Downs as well. He won the Tampa Bay Derby two starts back. So the Puma's one that I would look at as an interesting player. He'll be 10-1 of the morning line again. He won't be that far off the early lead. That's an interesting one for me to look at. A horse that I saw run down here in New Mexico a couple of times back was a horse by the name of Pavlovian. Huge price at 30-1 of the morning line. Trainer Doug O'Neill has won the Derby before with I'll Have Another. And Pavlovian has a unique running style. He'll be close to, if not on the early lead. There is not like some speed demon who's going to go out there and set insanely fast fractions. There's going to be a battle for the early lead. I don't know if Pavlovian can go a mile and a quarter, but I know he'll be battling for the lead somewhere midway around the far turn. So he's someone that you may want to consider for some of those deeper exotics.
Steve Bordstein again joining us to talk Kentucky Derby. Steve, it's go time. Give it to me. How does this finish? 1, 2, 3. How do you see it going?
I loved Further Ado's last race in the Bluegrass Stakes. He showed me a lot, not only when he won that race, but then going back to Keeneland. I think if they had their option, they'd love to run the Kentucky Derby at Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington, because he's 2-for-2 there, with both of his wins being by a combined margin of 31 lengths. But he really comes into this race in sharp order. He is one of the few horses, again, much like we mentioned earlier, Further Ado does have a race and a win over this racetrack. He won the Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes over this racetrack last November. So not only is he a multiple stakes winner, he's also a stakes winner over this racetrack. His running style suits him just fine. He'll be just off the pace. John Velasquez teaming up with Brad Cox, if you're not familiar with the name, he's the guy that you wanted Bob Baffert to be when Bob Baffert was growing up. He's a true horseman. A true horseman in every sense of the word, and it's time. It's time for Further Ado to get his play. He's 6-1 on the morning line. I don't believe that's factual at all. I believe he's going to be close to the favorite, if not the second choice, when the gates open in the race. Further Ado, the post position doesn't bother me. The 18 post in a field like this, again, all I need him to do is settle into that first flight of horses. He's not going to have 9 horses crashing on top of him. He's going to be one of those horses crashing on top of others. So I just need him to stay out of trouble early. I think he'll have something left in the lane. Further Ado for me is my top selection. I mentioned number 9, the Puma. He's another one I would look at. The number 6 horse, Commandment. I think he'll be coming from off the pace. And we mentioned the favorite, number 1, Renegade. If the speed does melt down, then Renegade's going to come on late, and I think he'll be a player down the stretch here. But I'm a real big fan of Further Ado, and I'm gonna pick him on top on Saturday.
That's Steve Bordstein, and yes, he does have a soft spot in his heart. I mean, he comes on a show hosted by a Notre Dame homer, for crying out loud. I know he's got a soft spot in his heart. Steve, it's always a pleasure.
That's just the sadist in me. That's what it is.
Let's talk about where we can find more of you.
TriCityRecordNM.com right now, getting immersed in the world of high school and college sports here in northwest New Mexico and southwestern Colorado, and doing a lot of that right now, as I know you are getting ready for the final weeks of the high school sports season, and of course keeping an eye on national sports and kind of shaking my head at some of the headlines that shouldn't be headlines at all in the world of sports. So you can find more of me at TriCityRecordNM.com, and on Facebook you can look me up at Sports with Steve Bordstein on Facebook. No, I don't do Twitter because I like to stay clean.
Yeah, it's the bathroom stall of a public. It's a public restroom bathroom stall. That's what it is.
That's what at old LA Coliseum. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Oakland Coliseum if you're from the Bay Area. Steve.
Did you hear the story about how they had to shut down a section of Anaheim Stadium because of rats?
Yeah. Yeah. So not only does ownership not value winning, they don't care about varmint getting in.
if there's ever a reason for just Angels fans to just stop, like, that's it right there. There's your reason. They don't even care that they don't have a good exterminator, for crying out loud.
The sad part is, if Disney still owned the Angels, this would be a story in itself, right? It could be Ratatouille Part 2. Like, this is a Disney Pixar film.
It would be like a Pixar movie.
Yeah. It wrote itself. Unfortunately, Disney doesn't own the Angels anymore. And I think, unfortunately for the fans, right? Because as bad as Disney has become, nobody's as bad as Artie Moreno.
Nope, no one. And God bless him.
Steve, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate the time.
Anytime, my friend. Thank you.
Always fun to get Steve Bornstein on. Always fun to talk a little horse racing as well. And we only do it about once a year, so we get to shake some things up. Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.